Support for WABE comes from the Community Foundation for Greater Atlanta. You can go beyond giving to impact. Learn more at cfgreateratlanta.org.
I'm Earlonne Woods.
I'm Nigel Poor. We're the hosts and creators of Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast.
In this next season, we've got stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells.
About residents in a women's prison who say they want to stay there.
And the most beautiful prison garden. Earlonne, I will never forget it.
Ear Hustle. Stories about life on the inside, told by those who live it.
Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
From WABE in Atlanta, welcome to this edition of Closer Look. I'm Rose Scott. Coming up on today's program...
The collapse of Silicon Valley Bank is causing shockwaves across the entire business world.
This is the second biggest bank failure that's ever happened in the United States.
4 decades after its creation, Silicon Valley Bank was the 16th largest bank in the U.S. It took just a day and a half for it to fall apart.
And that's because Silicon Valley Bank depositors reacted by withdrawing $42 billion in one day. So here's a question. What's the potential fallout for community banks, especially here in Georgia? So I'll speak with Georgia Banking Association officials and a local bank owner. Also, again, the number of mass shootings this year continues to increase after this past weekend, and that puts the number over 160. But we'll meet Hope, a canine comfort dog who's trained to just simply be there during times of grief and trauma. All those conversations coming up, but first, a check of these headlines. The state school superintendent is calling for the DeKalb County School Board to pause its search for a new superintendent. WAB politics reporter Raul Bala reports the board could pick a new leader this week.
In a letter to school board member, state school superintendent Richard Woods asked for interim superintendent Vasan Tinsley to be given more time to, quote, get the district on solid footing. This comes as the board has chosen Devon Horton as its only finalist to be the next superintendent. At 3 recent town halls, questions were raised, including the small size of the Illinois district that Horton leads now and how he handled the return to school during the COVID pandemic. In a statement, school board chair DeJohn DaCosta says the board is committed to making an informed decision. At one of the town halls, Horton was asked why he should be the choice.
I've been built for this work over the last few years. Working as a superintendent in Chicago during the pandemic gives anyone who worked during that time a different level of credibility and responsibility.
Wednesday is the earliest the DeKalb County School Board could confirm Horton's appointment. Raul Bally, WABE News.
In other news, the Fulton County Sheriff's Office says it's added staff members to its mental health unit and transferred more than 600 detainees to other counties to help relieve overcrowding. That's as an investigation is underway into the death of 35-year-old LaShawn Thompson, whose family alleges was covered in bedbugs when he was found dead in the psychiatric wing of the Fulton County Jail in September of last year. Now, Thompson had been arrested for a misdemeanor but not yet charged. Sheriff's officials also say they'll ask the Georgia Bureau of Investigation to determine whether any criminal charges are warranted in the Thompson case. Clayton County is conducting a study this week to determine whether residents have access to fair housing choices, as we hear from Dormia Vance.
The study is a way to identify housing barriers residents may face while searching for places to live. Clayton officials say the review is required every 5 years for those who receive the Community Development Block Grant through the Department of Housing. The county's most recent study was conducted in 2017. Officials say at that time, several factors limited fair housing for residents, like economic displacement and a loss of affordable units. Officials also say they hope to implement recommendations to limit housing discrimination once the study is complete. Residents can get involved starting Wednesday by attending community meetings or submitting information online. Dormia Vance, WABE News.
And finally,
and Barlow, his pitch is laced down the right field line. The diving pass, Quintino, and Atlanta is back in front.
Had a baby Vaughn.
The Atlanta Braves just keep winning. The team is now out west looking to extend a 6-game winning streak. The Braves take on the Padres in San Diego late this evening. That's after sweeping the Royals in Kansas City in 3 games over the weekend. And before that, the Cincinnati Reds. The last team the Braves lost to, well, it was San Diego earlier this month. Atlanta is currently 12-4 on the young season and occupying first place in the National League East. You're listening to Closer Look.
Support for WABE comes from the Community Foundation for Greater Atlanta. If you love Atlanta, you can invest in the big picture. Learn more at cfgreateratlanta.org. Support comes from Grady Health Foundation, presenting Move for Grady Saturday, April 27th, featuring a family-friendly bike ride through Atlanta's in-town neighborhoods. There's a ride, run, or walk distance for everyone, benefiting Grady Health System. More at moveforgrady.com.
And Closer Look continues from WABE in Atlanta. I'm Rose Scott. Well, you know the headlines. It was the largest financial crisis since the 2008 crash, which led to the Great Recession.
The collapse of Silicon Valley Bank is causing shockwaves across the entire business world.
This is the second biggest bank failure that's ever happened in the United States.
4 decades after its creation, Silicon Valley Bank was the 16th largest bank in the U.S. It took just a day and a half for it to fall apart.
Yes, it did. What caused all of that? Well, Silicon Valley Bank depositors withdrew, hold on to this, $42 billion in one day. Wow. So is the collapse of SVB a wider warning about things to come nationwide? Well, last week, documents from the Federal Reserve revealed the agency expects an ongoing banking crisis will likely lead to a mild recession later this year, which it might take us to recover another 2 years. We've been down that road before. And while the Fed says it's getting some control over inflation, food and energy costs remain high, and home prices are expected to take several months to slow down. That's according to everybody who says they're an expert, because they also predict another interest rate hike in May. And some people think that's the reason why there have been bank failures. I'm not an expert in this. I just asked the questions. So here it is. It wasn't just SVB. You know, Signature Bank depositors withdrew $10 billion in one day. This effect is known as a bank run. So lessons learned, and might Georgia banks be at risk? Here to talk about it, because they're all about this, from the Georgia Bankers Association, Executive Vice President and Chief Operating Officer David Oliver, and Joe Brannan, the President and Chief Executive Officer. Thank you both for taking the time.
Appreciate it. Thank you for having us.
Thank you, Rose.
Let's begin here. Someone listening says, I just don't understand what happened. Give me the kindergarten version. Who wants to take it?
David, why don't you take that one?
Sure. Let me start out, Rose, by just kind of setting the stage a little bit so mm-hmm. folks understand what the banking industry in Georgia looks like, if you will. A lot of people may not realize there are 203 banks that do business in Georgia. Mm-hmm. 147 of those are based right here in our home state, and 141 of those are community-based institutions, mm-hmm. so they're your hometown banks. In Atlanta, the Atlanta MSA, there are 83 different banks and more than 1,000 offices. So mm-hmm. there's a lot of choice and competition for business. Georgia banks are very different than the banks that went through the closures back in March. There are a few things that I'll share with your listeners that kind of help them understand that. First of all, our banks aren't as heavily concentrated in Silicon Valley technology startups, venture capital companies, and the like. Second, the state's banks have lower levels of uninsured deposits. Mm-hmm. They also have less exposure to the investments that have lost value that those two institutions were forced to sell before maturity, which mm-hmm. accelerated kind of the run on their deposits, if you will. So our banking environment is stable. We've heard from our banking commissioner's office and Senate testimony along those lines. Mm-hmm. So we feel very confident that depositors are protected.
So even upon hearing that, and Joe, you can understand that, though, when you hear that these two big major banks, whether we have the same type of platform or not, consumers are like, okay, here we go again. We've been down this road before, 2008. If you are a certain age, your parents or your grandparents who deal with it, we're dealing with Great Depression, and I think telling you guys coming into this segment, you know, I had a grandfather who was like, banks, you know, because do it the old-fashioned way, keep it at home. But you can understand, Joe, folks getting a little antsy and not having, if it was already shook, having some feelings about our financial institution right now.
Rose, absolutely. I'm the first one in my family to have a checking account, so I understand that background. We have had bank closures in Georgia before.
Well,
unusual. Unusual. Yeah. This was during the Great Recession. We had not had a closure in more than two decades before then and haven't had one since. I think the real difference there, Rose, and this is where we feel so much better here in Georgia than maybe you would feel if you don't live and breathe the stuff every day like we do. Traditionally, when a bank is closed, it's because of credit losses. You have the customers that the bank has lent money to. In our case, we had during the Great Recession in the real estate industry. They were not able to pay those loans back in big numbers, and then the regulators came in and closed them. But it was a very long process, 2, 3, 4 months, so they had time to do that. We were just shocked at how fast this happened at Silicon Valley, and that's what everybody was concerned about.
It one day, I mean, you heard the clip saying, you know, they've been around a while, and all it took was in 48 hours for this entire bank to just collapse. But I want to go back to after the Great Recession, because I think it might have been 2011 or 2012. We had more than, and correct me if I'm wrong, at least more than 10 banks that shuttered.
I wish it were 10.
At that time, but yeah, I mean.
Right, the accurate number during that period. Georgia had 92 of the 385 banks at the time that were closed, directly related to the real estate explosion. But the good news with all of that, and the point I was making about the process of closing a bank, that not a penny of FDIC insured money was lost, and that it never has since FDIC was created. The regulators, when they swoop in, it's not like they swooped in at Silicon Valley and it was just a shock to everyone. In most cases, it's a very long, drawn-out process, and people are aware of what's going on, and you very seldom will have any uninsured deposits left in the bank.
Let's back up for a moment and make sure we get some definitions for our listeners. When we talk about small banks and community banks, they're not necessarily the same. They're different, right? I mean, or do you want to? I don't want to use them interchangeably, community and small. I want folks to understand what we're talking about.
Well, generally, a community bank is a smaller institution.
Sure.
Hometown based. For example, the median bank in Georgia is a bank called Durden Banking Company. It's in Twin City, which is in East Central Georgia. They have 4 offices, 48 employees, about 264 million in deposits. That's a community bank. That's a smaller institution.
So this bank run, which was a term for some people, meaning basically it's like, okay, this happened, so now it's going to trigger other depositors in a similar, as long as the banks are in a similar sort of the way they operate. So this bank run, was that a surprise to you then after what happened with SVB, and then we go over to Signature Bank, and then they lose $10 billion in one day? That's consumer habit. You can't control that.
That was controlled by primarily a very small handful of people that this bank was concentrated in doing business with. That was a risk to that institution, and that was a risk that did not pay off for them. But realizing in most cases, that's just not how it works. We have the people that are doing business with traditional banks, like the banks here in Georgia, is people they know, is people they see. They can walk into the bank anytime and talk to someone. They can call them. That is what Georgia banking is more like than Silicon Valley Bank or Signature Bank in New York. So it's a very different environment we have here. Very little concentrations that we have in those types of concentrations. Those two banks, we don't have banks involved in cryptocurrency like Signature Bank was. A very different environment here in Georgia.
But what do you say? But I mean, for folks who are listening, saying, "Well, are you saying then we're just all protected, nothing to worry about here, David?"
Well, as Joe mentioned, not a penny of FDIC insured deposits have ever been lost, and there are multiple ways to structure your accounts. If you're fortunate enough to have more than $250,000 at the base level, there are other ways within that deposit insurance structure that you can have more than $250,000 of coverage, and that's where you talk to your banker. But I'll just give your listeners one example. For example, if you have a joint bank account with you or your spouse or your partner, that is $250,000 of insurance protection per account owner. So that would be up to $500,000. So that's why it's important to go talk to your banker. If you're in the fortunate position of having more than the base $250,000, talk to your banker, and they'll be able to come up with some solutions for you to further protect your money.
What are the lessons learned, or what, or you feel like perhaps they should have been? I don't know if there's something that you can predict, particularly for a bank like SVB. So what are the lessons learned here, not just for the feds, but just for the banking industry through your lens?
Sure. I think one thing is you have to be attentive to what's going on around you. We know that with the Georgia banks. We're going to know from the Federal Reserve that supervised this bank in Silicon Valley. We're going to know what happened. We're going to learn from that. But again, I think what we're going to learn is they really are as different as we thought they would. But one thing that really, really happened, and we were nervous about how quick that happened and what's going to happen on Monday, the next Monday. And that's when the federal government came in, the Treasury, FDIC, and said, all right, we're covering all the deposits. That settled the markets. And here we are a month later, and we are almost not hearing much about it anymore. Mm-hmm. People have settled down. They're realizing that was sort of a one-off thing. We don't need to worry. We know who our banker is. We've got the coverage we want. Realize insurance coverage only comes into play when a bank doesn't make it. Mm-hmm. We haven't had a bank that hasn't made it in over a decade now here in Georgia. But there are protections in place for those depositors, and that's what makes us different from doing business with a non-bank mm-hmm. or someone that doesn't have FDIC coverage.
What have you all been hearing, though, from your member banks? Or so, you know, they're saying, okay, y'all saying, let's not worry about this because it's a different type of platform than out there in Silicon Valley where you have venture capitalists who are apparently, you know, the reason for it, I don't know, depending on who you ask, don't send me an email. So what have you been hearing from your members?
They are seeing deposits move around among the banks. You mentioned our community banks. We're mm-hmm. seeing actually in the community banks, in many cases, their deposits are rising.
Really?
In this environment. People are looking at their accounts and they're saying, okay, well, maybe I should go with a bank. I can walk in and I can talk to somebody. Mm-hmm. We have so many ways to structure accounts. Like, for example, if you've got $1 million on deposit, that bank may be able to work out something with other banks mm-hmm. and share that deposit. That's done every single day. So there's so many ways to allay people's fears. And I think we don't even think about that until we have a surprise like right. Silicon like Valley Bank. And then I wish I were fortunate enough to have to worry about that. But the thing about it is that it's been in place since the 30s. Not a penny has been lost. And these are big stories. They're shocking stories.
Yeah. Yeah. When 42 million leaves one bank in a day, that's going to make the headlines.
That's right. And that was a liquidity. Those deposits left, and that's what took that back down. Most banks, when they don't make it, is customers didn't pay back their loans. That is a credit issue. And so that's real big difference.
Okay. Well,
and Rose, you asked about some things we were hearing from members. Yeah. I think it's also worth noting that we kind of did an informal poll of some of our members during that time. And we had some of our member banks that said, hey, we checked in with our call center today and we haven't had a single call from a customer worried about the safety of their deposits. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was happening around the state.
And I think there's been some real concerted effort among banks of all size to say the right things. The largest banks are telling their employees, don't use this crisis as a way to grow our business. There's a role for every size bank.
Right, but a bank can say, listen, you know, concerns about what's happening in the banking industry. We're here. We're homegrown. We're part of your community. They may not exactly say, listen, don't worry about SVB. That will never happen to us. But this is I hate to use the word golden opportunity, but for these local banks, for Georgia banks, I'm sure they're taking a little bit of time to let folks know we're here. You don't have to worry about that happening. You know, marketing, I mean,
they're not missing that opportunity. Yeah. The conversations have been ongoing. Outbound calls have been made. It was sort of surprising, as David said, it was sort of surprising so many of our banks really weren't getting calls. Mm-hmm. So you do worry about that. You don't want a Silicon Valley to happen when people just sort of move their money because they can. You reach out and have those conversations. That's what's different about our industry are those outbound calls, too.
We have been covering this a lot on the program, which is how to best serve unbanked and underbanked households. Of course, we all know that for some folks, you know, even trying to maintain if it's a $500 balance in the checking or whatever, that's problematic. And then, you know, there are some banks that cater to folks that are low wage earners. Do you see the fallout from this? I don't call it the potential implication, maybe more programs to get folks who are underbanked or unbanked into banking institutions, particularly local and community?
It's a great opportunity. It really is. We follow the FDIC releases the unbanked numbers every other year. And in Georgia, those numbers have been dropping every 2 years. The last report was out last year, and it showed the number of unbanked in the metropolitan Atlanta area was around 2%. It had been 5 to 7% just 4 and 5 years before. So we're making some progress. But stories like this make people begin think about things they might not have thought about. Mm-hmm. I've got money sitting in a jar. I've got money that I want to put somewhere that I know is protected so I can sleep at night. That is giving us the opportunity to work with people that have never thought about having a bank relationship. And so we see that as a positive.
Want to add anything to that?
No, Joe hit the nail on the head with it.
Okay, so now we don't want to blame anybody, but some folks out there, well, they blame the interest rates as also part of some of these bank failures. Your thoughts on that? Is that fair?
Well, for the two specific failures, there was an interest rate component because what that was doing was it was changing the value of their investments. Mm-hmm. They had invested in some securities that were the change in interest rates made those securities lose value, and because their business customers, the Silicon Valley businesses, were running through cash at a higher rate, those customers were having to withdraw more of their funds to meet their payroll and meet their business expenses, which caused them to then liquidate some of those investments that had been affected by the interest rates. So it's kind of a domino effect there.
Joe, going to add anything to that?
Well, I don't think we would blame the Fed for trying to bring inflation under control, but
I'm not blaming you. I'm just telling you what I've been reading.
Right. Well, I've read it too, but I think the issue there is it's affected anyone who has invested in treasuries. The value of those as rates went up, those bonds, short-term values went down. Most people don't have to sell those. Mm-hmm. We sit on them until they mature. But the unfortunate thing with those two banks, they had to sell those at a time when the values were less than what they needed.
There was a quote from someone that said, they were surprised how quickly the government declared SVB's failure a financial crisis rather than calling it a, quote, period of intermediate bank stress, close quote.
What does that mean? I don't have any idea what those big words mean. It was, they did the right thing.
This is from an associate professor of finance at Wharton, so I'm just telling you.
Those are big words. Good for him. No, but the issue there is they did the right thing. I mean, those were large banks. They were large regional banks. They were not the biggest banks, but they were the largest banks to fail since Washington Mutual and since IndyMac failed during the worst of the downturn. So they needed to do something. I mean, it was so unexpected. It happened so quickly that required the Federal Reserve and it required the Treasury Department to implement what they call systemic risk status. That gave them the authority
to guarantee them all. And we should be clear, it wasn't like the SVB technically got a bailout. I mean, because Washington refused to call it a bailout. It was more of the FDIC is going to handle this. So it's not a bailout.
Right. I wouldn't use that word. The bottom line, what they did when they said all these deposits are protected, they're protected by the deposit insurance fund that is paid for by the banking industry. So the banking industry together has gone together and said, we will insure every single deposit there.
As we wrap up, if we are going to hit this, which keeps changing, now it's a mild recession, according to folks in your industry, that we can expect. What's the outcome as we end 2023? And you think we've got three more quarters to go? So
right, the outcome.
Yeah, I mean, what do you think? Is this the end of the big bank failures or?
I'm not gonna.
You don't want to go on record.
What we can say is if you're going to – Roger Tutterow is a well-known economics professor at Kennesaw State. Roger spoke at an event recently for us, and he said, look, if you're going to have a recession, isn't it great to be in a state like Georgia that has a robust economy that isn't recession-proof, but we have we have so many good things happening in Georgia. We're going to have a recession, but we're going to be fine. So I listen to people like that. The recessions affect us all, in various ways, but we usually don't know they even happen until it's been several quarters later when people said, oh, by the way, we had a recession several months ago.
Well, and I think, too, to be fair, folks pay attention to their quality of life here, how much the eggs cost, you know, why is gas this high? That's what I think the average person pays. You all may pay attention to some different metrics, but for most people, it's what am I spending? What do I have, you know, what I've, first of all, what I have coming in, what am I spending it on? And then that, the high cost in between there. So I think that's what most folks, that's the metric they use.
Absolutely. That's the right one to use. I mean, you see all the reports that come out. This is the inflation absent food and gas. Well, that's what I spend money on.
Yeah.
You know, I'm the grocery shopper in my house. I just, for Easter, I spent $3.60 for an 18 pack of eggs. Last month, that began with a six.
Yeah.
So, you know, those prices matter, and food prices altogether are up 20%. Those are embedded.
All right. Well, we shall see. If I have to bring y'all back at the end of the year to do some explaining. From the Georgia's Bankers Association, Executive Vice President, Chief Operating Officer David Oliver, and Joe Brandon, the President and Chief Executive Officer. Thank you so much for taking the time. I appreciate it.
Rose, thank you.
Thank you, Rose.
So get my money out the mattress and put it back in the bank?
Put it in the bank.
Absolutely.
I don't know. And Closer Look continues from WABE in Atlanta. I'm Rose Scanna. We'll continue to examine the fallout after the two latest bank failures, of course, Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank. Now, as mentioned, there are 140 community banks headquartered right here in Georgia. And so with this collapse, it did cause some alarm among consumers who quickly withdrew their funds from smaller banks, maybe not in the area of $42 billion, but hey, every little bit helps everyone. Here to discuss it now is John McNair, the president and CEO of the Community Bankers Association of Georgia, and Harold Reynolds, the president and CEO of Bank South. Thank you both for taking the time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Rose.
Just had some gentleman on who said, Georgia's banking system, pretty solid, pretty stable, nothing to be alarmed here. Just real quickly, you all subscribe by that same. I'll start with you, President McNair.
We do. And thank you very much for having us. And it's not only us, but it's also the Department of Banking and Finance here in Georgia. Recently, actually, towards the end of the legislative session, Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Banking and Finance, Beaufier, has actually testified to the Senate Banking Committee to that point. Mm-hmm. So it's not the association saying that as well. It's also our own Department of Banking and Finance as well.
All right. Mr. Reynolds, President and CEO of Bank South, when you first heard about this, and I know the first thing you said, well, it's not us, but again, it happened so quickly, that had to be alarming.
Yeah, Rose, first of all, I thank you, too, for having this discussion, because there's a lot of misinformation out there. Oh, yeah, I think it was concerning when it first happened. And, you know, everybody's really curious about what actually took place that quickly, like almost a lightning strike. And I don't know if you want to, I had a little insight on that. I have a close relative who manages a investment fund mm-hmm. out of New York City, who Silicon Valley Bank was really their primary bank for the companies they had invested in. So I was hearing a lot of his concern. You know, in the days that built up for that basically run on Silicon Valley Bank. So, yeah, I mean, I think anything that happens, like, it's so unusual. That's yeah. why it's so newsworthy, is because and this one in particular is unusual. Hate to use the word unique too much, but these type banks didn't even exist a couple of decades mm-hmm. ago, or even a decade ago.
Did the person, you know, that they withdraw their money like the other folks that
they got most of their money out. The companies had, and this is probably typical, small to typical, they had over $1 billion on deposit mm-hmm. in the various companies they had invested in. And And they were actually part of the group who, due to social media messaging and everything, was where, you know, said, you've got to get out. And they got out. They didn't get all their money out. A lot of times Silicon Valley would, so I understand it would require when they made loans to the companies to keep their deposits there mm-hmm. as part of the loan.
Let me ask you this. For listeners not familiar with Bank South, describe your typical customer. Who are they?
Well, we have a wide range of customers. We grew up in Greensboro, Georgia, small, very small town, small community 46 years ago. Of course, Greene County has transformed over my lifetime, but where I'm happen to be sitting in our Watkinsville office is just right outside of Athens. And mm-hmm. we have a mortgage company based in Atlanta and a bank near the mortgage company office. And we're in Savannah, but we have, you know, and all these markets are different, but we have a very large customer base and a lot of consumer loans. And I heard you talking to you earlier about access to banking. We have a first-time banking access account, and then also that's no cost, no fees, nothing. And okay. and then we actually have what we call a fresh start program for anybody who's lost their banking privileges at our bank or another bank to give a fresh start for checking. So we see small consumers up to larger businesses, mm-hmm. but we're not banking investment firms.
So you ain't got to worry about $42 billion walking out the door in one day, is what you're saying?
That would be quick, sudden death for us, since that's 42 times more deposits than we have.
John McNair, let me get your thoughts on this, because with the two previous guests who talked about now, although you don't want to try to capitalize on the failure of two other banks, but now is the time that smaller or community banks should be reassuring to their customers and maybe even trying to you know, attract new folks in the door.
And they really have over the past several years. If you remember, you know, just, Harold, 18, 24 months ago, we had PPP loans, right? When the government was helping keep small businesses alive and healthy. And, you know, community banks, they are the primary generators of small business loans. And mm-hmm. just in Georgia, I think we did 7% of all the PPP loans that were done entirely, two-thirds to the minority community as well. Mm-hmm. So that relationship in enhancing, if you will, it's been in place ever since community banks have been around, but it really got enhanced the last several years with PPP. People began to take a look at a local bank and say, mm-hmm. you know, when times are tough, it's good to be able to pick up the phone and call a banker like Harold Reynolds and know the fact that they know mm-hmm. my business and know my name. So, yes, I mean, I think community banks are telling their story. Harold's written a couple wonderful op-eds as well. Mm-hmm. Banks have been posting things on social media. You know, again, just say, look, we're not one of these too big to fail banks. We're, mm-hmm. you know, we're banks in your hometown. We all go to church together. Our kids go to school together. We go to the grocery store together. So you're exactly right.
Well, let me ask you, Harold, how are you reassuring your customers?
Well, we immediately begin reaching out to our depositors, which I'll tell this story around in that most people who are depositors hadn't felt too good the last few years with interest rates so low. Maybe they felt like they were taken advantage of. Because, you know, the only time they'd hear from the bank was lowering their interest rates. And obviously that's turned, and depositors now are attracting a lot of attention. And we've always known that if you went back to the Great Recession, the banks that did well, actually did well during that, were banks that had what we call a strong core deposit base, which mm-hmm. are customers that are with that bank with a multitude of services. And so we started reaching out because I'm like most bankers. I see a lot of clouds. I see more clouds than I do silver linings. Mm-hmm. In fact, I've been accused of predicting 12 of the last three recessions. So, you know, I understand the immediate concern that people would have, particularly those who have deposits greater than the FDIC and insurance. Mm-hmm. And you know, I feel a strong fiduciary duty to those customers and those depositors. And so we immediately started reaching out to them. and you know, seeing what their is their money, not my money. And so it's their concerns that are important, not necessarily what I think. You know, if they get my advice, I'll give it to them. But we wanted to do whatever we could to make them feel secure.
And I'm curious, in Bank South, you all offer all the different types of loan, whether residential, commercial, you all offer all those type of loans?
We do.
So let me ask you this, because it's been reported that the commercial real estate market is, quote, a ticking time bomb, not my words, for smaller banks. And some say, well, you know, they're sitting on a pile of toxic loans. Now, when you hear that, and more folks are working from home, so maybe there aren't a lot of new builds or brick and mortars coming online. Do you have some concerns about what this might do to that particular area, the product that you all offer?
I stay concerned about everything, you know, but so far most of that has been in office space. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, they're saying real estate location, location, location. And those are mainly in the larger cities have seen that happen. You know, most office buildings are pretty huge facilities, and those are things that community banks are highly unlikely to be lending on. And what we've seen throughout, even during the COVID shutdown, is the type of small businesses that we would bank. You know, people were going to work, and they're not renting those, you know, with 100 different tenants mm-hmm. in a building. So far, we haven't seen issues on that.
John McNair, as we begin to wrap up, and I asked the other guest this question, too, about lessons learned. And again, it's a different type of situation out there in Silicon Valley as it is here in Georgia. But a bank is a bank. And so if there are some lessons to be learned that community banks can take from all this, what is it?
Oh, just don't be over-concentrated, right? And you have an over-concentration of assets in one particular category. You know, when you have a rising interest rate environment, I think one of the guests previously pointed out that Silicon Valley Bank got in trouble with their investment portfolio because mm-hmm. they went too long out on the curve and didn't factor in the fact that, hey, at some point, interest rates are going to start increasing. So, you know, manage your assets, manage your portfolio prudently and with the eye on diversification. Mm-hmm. So, and if you heard what Harold had to say, he's into consumer loans, mortgage loans, small business loans. He has a well-diversified portfolio. It's not overly concentrated in one particular category or another. So I think that's the key lesson with both these two larger institutions, mm-hmm. Signature Bank and Silicon Valley Bank.
Harold Reynolds, I'll give you the last word on that.
Yeah, you know, I'm really surprised that Silicon Valley hadn't hedged that portfolio and take that interest rate off the table. Mm-hmm. And that's something I want to see come out of this. And then I'll add one more thing from as much as, and I think somebody with money who's accumulated money ought to be concerned about their money and feel secure where it is. Mm-hmm. And it's our job to provide that, whatever it takes to do that. But I'm also getting customers saying, oh, I'm not worried about my money with your bank. I'm worried about the Fed. I'm worried about what every time somebody from the Treasury comes out and speak, it confuses me a little bit more. And, you know, it's more of a lack of trust in their decisions. You asked some questions about, did they call it a banking crisis or something else? And mm-hmm. why did they swoop in as a bailout? And that adds a lot of confusion out there with people about, like, what the heck's going on here?
And that's the questions I've gotten from listeners and emails that said, I just don't understand how this could happen for a bank. So we shall all continue to watch this. John McNair, the president and CEO of the Community Bankers Association of Georgia, and Harold Reynolds, the president and CEO of Bank South. Someone just sent me an email that says, my mortgage is with Bank South. Well, good for y'all.
Right.
You like to hear that, huh, Harold?
We heard about it in the waiting room.
Thank you so much.
If you need a mortgage, get there.
There you go. Don't be free advertising over here. Thank you. Underwriting.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you both for taking
the
time.
Thanks for having us, Rose. All right. Great pleasure. Take
Appreciate
care.
Appreciate it. And Closer Look continues from WABE in Atlanta. I'm Rose Scott. Today is the 107th day of the year, but as a nation, we've already experienced more than 160 mass shootings, according to the Gun Violence Archive. And these tragedies have become an all too common occurrence. Well, since 2008, the Illinois-based Lutheran Church Charities has deployed canine comfort dogs to devastating incidents like the mass shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary School. And more recently, comfort dogs were sent after the mass shooting in Kentucky and Tennessee. Well, joining me now in studio is Hope. She's a purebred golden retriever who just returned from Nashville after the Covenant School shooting. And she's joined by her handlers, Peter Amelgemeyer and Sherry Booker from Faith Lutheran Church in Marietta. Thank you both for taking time. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
First of all, Peter, Hope is going home with me.
Okay, we have a problem already.
Tell me about Hope and what's a typical, when y'all take Hope somewhere, what's her day like?
Hope has a very busy calendar. We have had her for about 5 years since she finished her training, and she is averaging about 2 visits a day. And we are going regularly to assisted living facilities, memory care facilities, hospitals, churches, schools, special needs. We also go to 4 different Cobb County courts where she helps calm the people down that are there.
Does Hope know what her job is, that this is what she's supposed to do, and how do you know that?
Absolutely she knows. Mm-hmm. When her vest is on, she's a totally different dog. You take the vest off and she is definitely a dog. She plays with her toys. She runs.
Chases squirrels.
Absolutely. Yes, yeah. Absolutely. But she definitely knows when she's working.
How? How do you train? You've had her since she was a puppy, I imagine, or?
We start training. The ministry is based out of Northbrook, Chicago, mm-hmm. outside of Chicago. And we start training. They're all golden retrievers. They're all purebred. We have picked them for their intelligence and their gentleness. We start training them at about 8 weeks. And we have people that take different turns so that she's comfortable dealing with different people. And it takes about 2,000 hours worth of intensive training before we get the dog. So we put our name on a list with our mission statement, and we got her when she was 19 months old.
Why a golden retriever? And I've heard this before, that they are just such a gentle breed. They are the perfect breed for something like this.
Exactly. They're a very calm breed, a very loving, a very trusting. And they're a breed that most of the public won't be afraid of when, you know, you're walking mm-hmm. around with them. We're very sensitive to the public for those who are afraid of dogs. But typically, they kind of see the nature of that dog. And she's pretty loving. She's something else.
How do you know when a dog like Hope is ready to interact with folks? I mean, and Hope is going into some situations where, you know, mass shootings, obviously, children, you know, lost. I mean, just so much. How do you know when a dog is ready?
That's a very good question, because we also know that there's a point in time where she just has absorbed too much. So when we go on a visit, we keep her fresh. We give her breaks because so much of what she sees and people feel come right down to her. And it's just a matter of us being aware of signs where she's tired.
Yeah, I was going to say, what are those signs?
A lot of things that we'll notice is that she will back into us. Her head will go lower. She's getting a little exhausted. Mm-hmm. And we really do watch for those. The one that's the hardest, but she is very forceful about it, is when she senses that somebody needs her. We can walk into a building and want to go to the right. Mm-hmm. And she will pull us and force us to go to the left because somebody she's sensing needs her. And she wants to go over and comfort that person. She's very, very sensitive. That emotion is what kind of tires her after a while. So, but after a little bit and a break, then she does pretty good.
How much of a break will Hope get? Y'all give her?
We try to keep her working for about an hour and a half. Mm-hmm. Then we'll give her maybe an hour off.
She likes me.
She does.
She likes everybody.
No, she likes me.
Oh,
yes.
Okay. She knows you're a dog person. Okay.
I love it. And listen, if a stray elephant came into my yard, I keep it. And although it's there for a small time, but for someone listening that says, wow, these comfort dogs really do, they add something, particularly when we're talking about mass shootings. You all can attest to that.
That's very true. And we have learned that we always tell people it's not about the dog, but the dog is a bridge. and people have a hard time relating to us, and it's so hard for us as humans to come up with the right thing to say. But a person can come up to a dog and just hug on the dog, cry on the dog. The dog understands.
And how long will Hope be employed? Does she have a retirement plan? Like, does she have a 403B or 401K? Like, will she? Yeah.
She will let us know.
Yeah.
And it's a lot in any of the service dogs. Most of them, they will let the people know that they don't. They're tired of working. We hope to get as many years as we can, and as long as she's happy, then we'll take her out and let her do her thing.
And who does she stay with when she's not working?
Sherry is the caregiver, so Sherry's the mom.
You're the mom.
Sherry's the most important person in the ministry.
Yeah,
I'm the lucky one. Let's put it that way. You know, someone's got to do that job.
And when she's ready to retire, where will...
Hopefully she'll be able to stay with me.
Okay.
There's some, you know, we got guidelines and that, but I would like to think that she could finish out. She will be a queen and a princess at that time.
And she is.
So.
And what about training for you all and then for folks who are working with Comfort Dogs? What's that process like?
When she is ready to be given to a church, the people who have committed to be handlers are also trained in Chicago. So we have about 7 people on our team who are trained to be handlers. So we all know the same commands. We all treat her the same way. So everything is consistent with her. And we're the ones that whenever there is a visit, there is always one trained handler that will go out with her.
And so it's not just for traumatic incidents or you know, you say you bring these dogs to assisted living facilities or facilities where you can help cheer folk up.
Yeah. We technically don't go unless we're invited.
Okay.
That is one of the things that's different about our organization. When we're invited, we respect confidentiality, and we want to make sure that people don't feel invaded. So they often appreciate that out of our group.
Is it just, in terms of an assessment, is it you all look at right there immediately with canine comfort and dogs like Hope, what they're able to do? You don't need to have studies, and you can just look and see. This is the only metric we need, is how folks are responding to Hope, and especially kids.
And that is so true, because we realize that we don't have to figure out what to say to somebody. The dog speaks the language that everybody understands, and we found that in every tragedy that we've gone to. And for example, with the sister ministry we have with the Hearts of Mercy and Compassion, where we brought those to Nashville, and we had the name of each of the victims on that heart, people just automatically went up there and knew that this was something that they could write their emotions on, not talk to us, not have to try to figure it out, but just like when they come to Hope, they just know that that's something they can do.
And it was an immediate calming presence when she came in. I joked, I feel like my blood pressure just, been talking about banks and bank failures, and folks losing money, and then here comes Hope, and all is well. Daniel's smiling now, and you know, so yeah, just Hope being here in this.
Yes, that is her job, and she does it very well.
Well, speaking of which, Peter, why do you do this?
It's a way that I look for being able to give back. I have been so blessed in my life, and I realize that there are people who just struggle. And whether or not it's somebody who's living in assisted living and they've lost their independence, or whether it is somebody, I'm a veteran, and whether a veteran has to deal with struggles and emotions, it's just some way that I can do. It's all about presence. So if I can just be there and Hope can make a difference, then I'm happy to do it.
Sherry, I'll give you the final word. Why do you do this?
The same reason. It's a gift that I can give to others. And in the way the world is today, I just wish we could be kind and be nice to one another. And doing this is a way that we can reach out and let people know we care. And it is true that the dog is just such an easy entrance.
Mm-hmm.
And she just works magic.
How much does she eat? Because I think I dropped some of my donut, and I think that's what
she would have loved that.
Yeah, she doesn't miss that. Yeah.
That is, she is still a dog, you know, so scavenging is something we always work on, but she's pretty good. She eats, you know, a cup and a half in the morning, a cup and a half in the afternoon, or regular diet. They're kept on a pretty strict diet to make sure they stay very healthy.
Mm-hmm.
She's got lots of good care.
And how many trips do you have to put her on a schedule? Like, she went last month. Let's not, you know, let's give her a break this month. Or can she handle that? Especially if you're traveling.
Yeah. Usually when a deployment comes, everything stops, you know, and we have to cancel our appointments. But usually she's going two. We could possibly work in a third one depending on the time of the day. Mm-hmm. As long as she has a break in between, she's pretty good.
Can we have a comfort dog for public radio folks?
Oh, you would just not believe how much better your day would go.
You wouldn't get any work accomplished.
There you
go. That's all right with me. Peter and Sherry and Hope, thank you, all of y'all beings, for coming in. Faith Lutheran Church and Marietta talking about Hope and other comfort dogs. Thank you so much. Good program.
Our pleasure. Thank you.
I got to do credits, Hope. Hang on. That's it for this edition of Closer Look. Our producers are Daniel Razel, LaShawn Hudson. Our supervising producer is Tiffany Griffith. Our engineer is Sawyer Vanderwerth. A reminder, let us know your thoughts on today's program. Send me an email, rose@wabe.org. And of course, I'm going to take a picture with Hope. Stay tuned to 90.1 WABE Atlanta. I'm Rose Scott.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Have you donated to WABE yet? I know you've heard us talking about why it's important, but it doesn't have to be this big decision. You can give at whatever amount fits your budget. It can be a spur-of-the-moment thing. You already get so much out of public radio, so just go for it. Visit wabe.org/donate and become a member right now. And thank you.